Guys, the Cloverfield Paradox dropped this Sunday after the Super Bowl. Luckily, our dimension is saved and there's no monsters roaming around. And here at Horror Movie News, we don't know Jack, but we will. So stay tuned.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies.
How can you not headbang to this?
Oh, it's so good.
Don't hurt yourself.
Yeah, I know. Yes. I almost like headbutted the mic. All right, real quick though, cameo to the video. Oh, wait for it. And here you go. Who's that being dragged along?
Oh my goodness.
Who's that being dragged right there in the background?
Yeah.
And that's familiar.
Wait for it. That's for real.
Oh, you fell.
That was not planned.
It worked out perfectly.
I love it.
And look at Jimmy not reacting at all.
He did so good, and I felt bad after. I'm like, I'm so sorry. I'm like, just keep going.
So everybody, that's from Anthrax's video Blood Eagle Wings that Jack Bennett actually produced and directed and wrote as well, right?
Yeah, I wrote it. It was definitely based on the song, but I wrote the treatment for it and everything. And
right on. Yeah. Nice. Well, we'll hear more about that later. First off, let's do some quick introductions. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Horror Movie News. I almost said Marvel. Wait, no, that's a different show. Horror Movie News. My name is Anthony Becerra. You can find me everywhere at Tony B. Dead, TonyBDead. And next to me, I have...
Hey, guys. I'm on a different seat this week. This is Oliver Jenin. Follow me on all social media platforms at Ollie Dreamer.
And then you can... Where do people find you online?
Where they find me?
Yeah.
You can follow me on Twitter at ThatJackBennett.
Right on.
You can friend me on Facebook. You can throw a rock through my window with a note tied to it. Whatever you want to do.
The old school method. Yes, yes.
And Carrie.
Okay. And hey, guys. My name is Carrie Lane. You can find me online at Carrie D. Lane. That's K-A-R-I-D-L-E-N-E. And you saw me in a clip. And yeah, for reals. That ball was for reals.
But it was fun. Yeah.
Everybody asked. Like, I just got so many texts saying, like, she's really good. Okay. That looked real.
Because there was, like, straw on the ground, and we're barefoot, us, like, the prisoner people, and we're being dragged, and I'm trying to resist, and I just, and it totally fell, and then we ended up breaking the shackles, too, because it was actually, you know, really, I'm like, no, let's do this, and then it broke, so then we had to hold them a certain way.
You actually,
but it was awesome.
It's a valuable lesson, too, in actor commitment, because you broke those shackles and then grabbed them immediately and tried to actually like hide it and everything, but we shot it in super slow motion, so
it's like nope. But we didn't quite use that one anyway, so
that was the first take when you fell on the ground.
But we did it 8 million more times.
But we used the first take
because it was gold.
It's too good not to use.
That's that magic, you know, that just happens. Right? Like you don't really call for it, but you're like, you know what, that was perfect.
Yeah. And it was in slow motion, so it was even better, you know.
And actor commitment, keep going till they say cut, because you don't know how good it is until after.
Yeah, I hear it's very tough to fall in slow motion, too. So.
Yeah, in slow-mo fall, it's all core work and Pilates, just saying.
It's funny, too, because I know I saw it live, but I just, because I've seen, of course, the footage over and over again, so I just remember how it looks in slow motion. It must look terrible live.
I know.
There must have been, you know.
I want to see it live now.
I wish Rolling Stone had been filming that part.
You should mention that they were there.
That's right. Yeah, Rolling Stone was on set. There was a publicist crawling all over the place, and it was great. There's actually, if you, I think you can find it online. There's a making of that's it's Scott Ian and Charlie, the drummer from Anthrax, Scott and Charlie. They came to set and they were hanging out, just watching us do these wonderful, horrible, gory things and absolutely
so
loving
nice.
Them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That
video.
Well, it's great too because I look like I'm really directing in all of that footage because I'm pointing. Because as soon as you get a camera on you, if you're directing, you just point.
Right.
You talk to somebody and then you point. But right before they filmed my little interview part of that video, I had just been told that the makeup application was going to take 3 times as long as we had scheduled.
Whoa.
And it had been this whole thing where all the time we were shooting, we were just going the steady clip, and then we had to stop dead for this makeup application. And at that moment, I was doing all the calculations of just like, how long is this going to take, and what are we actually going to make our day? Mm-hmm. And that's the moment, and I turned around, and the girl from Rolling Stone says, "You got 5 minutes?" And so my interview is like, well, the thing about genre filmmaking is But it was all great. Jerry Constantine was the prosthetics artist who put that horrible thing on James Duval's back.
Right, yeah.
And he was just an absolute champion. We made our day and everything was great.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Everybody on that was... Can I curse on this?
Yeah. It's the internet.
Fucking great. It's the internet.
Nice.
All right. Yeah. Ask me anything. Every detail of every shot has like a story behind it. Has like a sometimes agonizing, sometimes celebratory story that leads up to what you see.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Crammed into an 8.5 minute.
So just heads up, Steve, we'll probably leave that video open. But real quick, I just want to cover some bases real quick. So where you can find us. So you can find us at youtube.com/popcorntalknetwork. Please rate and subscribe there to our channel. Also give us a thumbs up on this video if you like it. If you don't, give us a thumbs down and tell us why in the comments section, and we'll get back to you. We'll see what we can do to improve
get into a fight online.
Yeah.
You can also follow us on Twitter at horrornewsptn, as well as on our Popcorn Talk website, popcorntalknetwork.com, and also on Apple Podcast, type in horror movie news and we should pop up with this little logo in the back right here. And give us again 5 stars and a rating, and also comments, anything you want, really. We'd greatly appreciate it. Jack, we like to start off the show with a little segment we call The Abyss, which is pretty much us staring into the abyss, which is like horror movies we have seen, or just movies in general that we have seen as well. So, actually, me and Oliver, I guess, will start it off, because we both saw this film.
Oh, yeah. Carrie saw it, too.
I didn't watch Cloverfield. No.
She saw Winchester, but we saw Cloverfield Paradox. Yes.
Well, should we... Are we spoiling
Let's
it?
Let's just
or?
Do, like...
Can you give a spoiler-free review?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, just, like, general overview of, like, what we thought, I guess.
And we can talk about it later when you do
see
it.
It's only Tuesday. It's come out, like, 2 days ago. Yeah. We'll give a little bit of time.
We'll let it...
By next week or something.
Definitely, let's give you our overview, though. Like, what did you think overall?
I didn't know what to expect, because I had no clue this movie was coming out.
I mean,
there was kind of, like, a rumor going on that we kind of, like, talked about briefly.
It was coming to Netflix, right.
But I'm, like, a huge Cloverfield fan of the original in 2008, and I was, like, so hyped. And I thought, like, J.J. Abrams and how, like, they produced it and how they marketed it was so brilliant, because we didn't know what the heck... to expect. Was this like a Godzilla film? Is this Cthulhu, H.P. Lovecraft? Like, what the heck?
Do you remember for a hot second there was a rumor it was a Voltron movie?
Yes.
Because somebody heard the guy say it's alive and they thought he said it's a lion.
My nerdy self, like.
Just decapitating
back
the liberty.
In the day, was just kind of like looking at all these theories on like some weird message boards. But anyway, back to this Cloverfield Paradox. I didn't really know what they were. I thought it was a little bit too comical at times.
Mm-hmm. As in, like, too funny?
Yeah.
Oh,
I feel like
yeah.
This is, like, a very serious, dire situation that they're in.
Let me just... Going off of what you just said, Chris O'Dowd's character, which is, I love him ever since I saw the IT Crowd. fantastic. But there's a scene where a person dies, and then he says a line, and was like, oh, I guess that's where the worms were. And it's, like, right after he's dead, I'm like, dude, like... read the room, I guess? I don't know. It was very, kind of shoehorned in. So.
Yeah, I mean, I'm all here for comical moments, but I think in this universe, I think this is a very, like, dark universe. I mean, considering Cloverfield and Cloverfield Lane, it was just kind of, like, I didn't know what they were doing with it. And then it felt almost too, like, old-school sci-fi, kind of, like, very, like...
Okay.
You know, just like even I can't. I don't
like an episode of Outer Limits.
You know what it felt like? It felt like an episode of Black Mirror,
or like the Twilight Zone too. Kind of, yeah. It felt like a
redundant.
It was very
No, those are very different. I'm watching Black Mirror, and I'm not as happy as when I've watched Twilight Zone. But I'm not that far into Black Mirror yet.
I
started at the very, very beginning.
In no way was I trying to suggest that Black Mirror is just a ripoff of Twilight Zone.
Oh, okay.
I think it's this generation's Twilight Zone.
Sure. And I love Black Mirror. No disrespect to Black Mirror at all. But like this didn't feel like the Cloverfield universe until maybe like the last. What is it?
Shot.
Like,
is it shaky cameras?
There was another scene. There was no shaky cameras. Another scene that was kind of like, oh, that's totally Cloverfield. But it's just kind of like the universe is also like very confusing at the same time. They explain it in depth.
Yeah.
Not really. But I think it's such an interesting concept that they had a lot of, like, they could have done
it. It had so much potential.
Yeah, yeah.
It just felt, it felt so flat on its face, to be
honest. I enjoyed it, but it's not, wasn't necessarily
I don't think I'll ever watch it again. I got what I, you know, it's just, I don't know, it wasn't, it was quite the letdown for me.
The cast was really good.
The cast, like, was great. The main lead actress that goes by Ava in the film, I believe she was fantastic.
And she, I believe she was also in Black Mirror.
Yeah, that's what I heard too. She was in Black
Mirror. That is a stellar cast. Like, I, that probably more than anything would draw me into watching the flick, which I haven't.
I forget she played Tam. I'm like, she was in Memoirs of a Geisha. I don't remember that.
Oh,
the actress's name.
Steve. Was she in Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon?
Was she?
I believe. Thank you, Steve. Yeah.
There we go.
She was. Yeah, she was cool.
Was she in that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I would watch that just to see
her. Yeah. Cool. She has a cool scene too. But yeah, overall, definitely watch it and tell us your thoughts. Yeah. Tell us if you liked it or not.
We should definitely talk about it, like, in depth when everyone else gets to see it.
Yeah,
because I'd love to hear what you guys think about it. Too, you
know? And we do have a little bit more on that, just like a little news story on that later. So, Carrie, what do you want?
Well, wait, Oliver, you saw a couple other movies.
Oh, well, I'll just real quick. I saw Black Panther. I went to a screening last night and it was amazing. And I will not spoil. I'm not spoiling it anything. No, this movie should not be spoiled at all. I feel so like everyone needs to go in this movie blind.
Yeah.
It was just fantastic. Now that is a stellar cast. Angela Bassett, Lupita Nyong'o, Letitia Wright, Chadwick Boseman, Michael B. Jordan, Martin Freeman. Oh my gosh.
Spoiler, it's good.
It's very good, and I will leave it at that because the world needs to see it next week.
Yeah. Cool. Can't wait.
You know, he's a real director. Like, I remember watching Creed, which I went and saw completely randomly. Like, I was visiting family for Thanksgiving, and I hadn't read anything about it, and I knew the premise, and I was like, Stallone's in it as Rocky. I'll check it out. You know, I like all these guys. And then just watching that movie reminded me that movies like that, sort of Hollywood, old-fashioned ABC stories, can be that good and that well observed, and it almost became a character study in places, and then also like a character study of modern Philadelphia, like all this stuff. It was such a fantastic movie, and I walked out and I was telling people, Creed is really good, and they're like, really? And then the next day, everyone was like, Creed is really good! And I think a lot of credit has to go to Ryan Coogler. He's a guy who's figured out how to make movies like that and be a great director within the parameters of a movie that you would think would be predictable or formulaic. So if Black Panther has any of that equation in it, yeah.
And for him to have to juggle, like, all the lore of the comics and and it being varying, like, I think it's just a very good film for today's age, you know?
Yeah. Just the trailers, the world building in the trailers just looked like something
you haven't seen. It's perfect. For it to come out, like, the release date is, like, such good timing.
And you see the pictures from the premiere?
Those clothes?
Purple carpet. Oh, my God.
Everybody was like, we are dressing up. Boom. You know. That was great.
I just want to live in Wakanda, and I'm just going to leave it at that. Yeah,
right? So. I wish it existed to save us from ourselves. All right, Carrie, take it away.
Yeah, not quite as excited as Black Panther. I saw Winchester.
Oh, boy.
I thought it was just okay. There are some good scares in it. Someone on Twitter was like, well, how is it? I'm like, I wasn't like, oh my gosh, it's amazing, but I didn't leave going, well, that was dumb. So I give it like a 3 out of 5. Like, not amazing, but not bad.
Is it a supernatural horror movie?
It is.
Oh, nice.
I am glad there is actually ghosts in it. Spoiler, but not spoiler, because that was something I was a little concerned about, because it's based on this, it's based on a real person, a real place, that I'm like, maybe they're gonna do it that's all in her head, and that would be so annoying. No, there are real ghosts. I those stories just bother me. I'm like, no, I want real supernatural stuff. The thing that they could have probably done a little bit better is only maybe 2 ghosts you get backstory on them, so then, like, their scares are better, because then there's more depth to them. Other ones are just like stock footage ghost, not that it is, but like random ghosts pop up, scare you, and you're like, could have been better if, like, we knew who it was or what their motives were more.
You ever noticed too that some of these movies, because that's, you know, Helen Mirren's in it, and it's sort of an A-list movie, but sometimes A-list filmmakers make these movies and you kind of feel like they haven't seen the movies that we've seen. So, like, I always made that joke. Do you all remember that movie Wolf with Jack Nicholson?
Yes.
Directed by Mike Nichols. You cannot deny that the cast and crew of Wolf is above and beyond just, like, top-shelf people. Mike Nichols, for crying out loud. And they direct...
Michelle Pfeiffer.
Michelle Pfeiffer, of course. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody who's in that. It's fantastic. And they made a werewolf movie that's really good if you've never seen a werewolf movie. It's like a bunch of A-list actors and this director, you know, who's unparalleled, all said, oh, that's an interesting idea. A man turns into a wolf. No one's ever seen anything like this. It's just that kind of thing where we inundate ourselves with all this stuff, and then you kind of feel like an idea that's stale to us is still kind of fresh to them because they're not always watching horror movies. It's a theory.
Yeah. I liked with Winchester is it's Helen Mirren's actually not quite the main character. It's a doctor coming to assess her sanity level. And so that was kind of interesting seeing it from his perspective. And he's also doing self-medicating. Because then you can start with the question of like, wait, is he seeing it for real? Or is this because he's taking drugs, essentially? So yeah, period piece-wise, it was cool. Maybe you might want to wait for like, on video, but or a matinee. Go as a matinee.
Or if you have the movie pass.
Yeah, or go to movie pass. That's what I did. Not sponsored by movie pass. But yeah, it was I was satisfied enough leaving. So I wasn't like, well, me. Okay. So but not like you need to rush.
Yeah, I still want to go watch it.
Oh, wait, have you seen Insidious, the last...
I didn't get to Insidious yet. I still want to see the third one, even though he said it doesn't matter, but I didn't get to it yet.
Yeah, I was just going to ask which one you thought was better, if you did see it. But
yeah, not yet.
The third one's the best.
Catching up.
There's a certain film series where you're like, a fourth one? Oh, my God.
It's the fourth one that's screws with you. You're always just like, wait, there's a fourth? Like,
because
it's three is just like, three is the magic number. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, for sure.
And then you, like, some people are just like, oh, yeah, I love that one with because the couple, they're paranormal investigators and stuff, and they go to the different places, and it's set in the 70s. And you're like, you were talking about the wrong film series.
The Conjuring. Yeah, exactly. They're so similar.
Well, we mentioned that before. Have you seen both Conjurings?
Yeah.
I like the second one better, actually.
You know what? There was some scarier aspects to it. Yeah. But I mean, for me, the whole...
Crooked Man, too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. The Crooked Man is so good.
The first, between the two Conjuring movies, my favorite part is still the girl saying, there's someone standing right behind the door. There's someone standing right there. Just like something like that.
Mm.
When you have a scene in a movie where a character seems utterly convinced of the reality of something terrifying, that to me is so much scarier than somebody who obviously is being pulled by wires down a hallway, you know, where it's like, oh, she's possessed by a demon. That's why it looks like she's in prosthetics. I like, maybe not even the psychological horror of it, I like to be convinced that what I'm watching is real. And that scene is so convincing.
The clapping game was scary,
too. The clapping game was good, too. Yeah.
So what have you seen, Jack?
I haven't been watching a lot. It's funny because when you're working around the clock, that tends to be the first thing that suffers is what you're watching. Mm-hmm. Or when you are watching stuff, it's like, I'm watching the Venture Brothers for the 8 millionth time.
Oh, yeah.
Things like that.
Go Team Venture.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I've always... Venture Brothers and The Wire are my two favorite shows that have ever been on TV.
Wow.
And I will argue that they are more similar than many people give them credit
for. I was about to say, they sound very different.
No, I think.
Yeah.
Wait, that's for another podcast. But I saw Shape of Water. I went and saw that in the theater.
What'd you think?
I loved every... I don't know how controversial this is going to be. I loved absolutely every aspect of it except the script. But every detail of it that wasn't based to the screenplay was gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
It's just gorgeous. And I saw another movie like that this past week. I went and saw Phantom Thread, which was another one where it's like, what an exquisite movie. And you almost feel like whether you like it or not almost doesn't matter at a certain point. Or it says more about you than it does about anything.
Mm-hmm.
I liked the experience of watching The Shape of Water a great deal. It's just that then when it was over, I was like, well, you know, and I just had that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been having that a lot lately where it's so funny that every detail being so acutely created, and you have that moment where you're just like, God, I couldn't even begin to, you know, it's unfathomable the amount of details that are in this movie and every aspect of the design and every aspect of the sets and all the actors are fantastic and Sally Hawkins is fantastic in that movie. I just don't know if I like it. You know, like, you have that weird thing where at the end of this whole, I have to give you credit for making an extraordinary film that I wasn't a big fan of. And then you feel like a complete asshole. Being, you know, I wanna like it. I just, I don't know, the characters are a little thin. And then you feel like you're somehow ruining someone else's experience. Mm-hmm. But I always feel that way, that, you know, movies are subjective.
Mm-hmm.
I watched Phantom Thread. And the first half of it I was absolutely in love with. And then there's a turn in the story, and I fell out of love with the movie, even though I find it as interesting and as wonderful. Like, it's wonderful. Like, every performance in it is wonderful. And every I saw it in 70mm, too.
Ooh.
So it was fantastic watching it. It looked like an old movie.
Yeah.
It was shot on film. You know, it was grainy. It was projected on 70. And I'm just sitting there going, like, this, it feels like I've stepped backwards and I'm watching a movie, you know, in 1979 or something like that. But then there's that thing of, it all comes down to the story. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a great film that I maybe didn't love at the end of the day. I don't know. I feel that way about Shape of Water too. So it's weird to be that audience member. Because then the first thing...
Because everyone else is just praising it, and it's been, like, critically acclaimed, so... But yeah, I think I can relate to that with, like, horror in general. Like, there's some... I can think of so many horror movies that are just like, oh my gosh, like, that... That was, like, such an amazing film. And I'm kind of like, meh.
Do they say it in that voice?
Yes, they do. Actually, just like that, right? That's actually my real voice. I have to lower my voice right now, so... Yes. But yeah, like, don't be ashamed. I feel the same.
But there's an article just came out the other day about expectations and managing expectations.
Yes.
Right.
And I feel like, okay, so there's, you can only be the audience member you are. And I think if everybody loves a movie and I don't really like it, like, I have that moment where I'm like, well, this doesn't really say anything except that my experience of this movie was different from their experience. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean, like, you know, I was in a noisy theater with a bunch of shitty people. No, I mean, like, I feel like we bring ourselves into every movie that we watch. Mm-hmm. So if you guys loved The Shape of Water, and I'm not going to sit here and pick it apart and try to convince you you're wrong, just like I hope you will not do that for me. I do think in fan culture we start to, you know, the shields and the
lances start to come up. That's like a little first reactions a lot of people have.
Yeah.
I remember I saw Last Jedi and I did not really like Force Awakens very much.
Mm-hmm.
And
at
the end of Last Jedi,
I loved Last Jedi. I was like, yes.
I loved it so much. Jedi, and I said out loud, isn't this great? A movie that literally everyone is going to love. They finally made it.
No.
And then I walked out of the theater into the abyss.
Yeah. I felt the exact same way. Like, The Force Awakens, I was like, it was all right. And then Last Jedi, I was like, that was so fun. And then it's so polarizing online. Yeah. But, oh, wow.
No, I have to completely agree with you. Because film is another art form in our world, you know? And, pretty much, it's very hard to remove yourself from yourself when watching a film, which is what I try to aspire to do with every film. Mm-hmm. Although Shape of Water is a very special case because I love Guillermo del Toro.
I can root for him every time, even if I'm not liking the individual films.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, because that's also another thing of, like, separating the director from his work, in a sense, of, like, a person.
Horrible people have made great films.
Yeah, yes. I mean, look at every... Never mind, I want to do that.
And he's a wonderful guy who made a movie that is getting... It, clearly, no one has to defend him.
Mm-hmm.
So me being one jackass who's sort of like, it's okay.
No. And also, like, I find that interesting. I don't want to ask it on air, but probably afterwards, I want to say, like,
no. I can tell you.
I want to know, like, what's... Well, just to hear.
Well, I was going
to
say, we have a lot
too. Yeah, so let's just get back on track, though.
Oh, okay.
Okay, I'm sorry.
There's a countdown. Yeah. There's 27 minutes.
We're not even past the first segment. All right, everybody, the crypt.
Yes.
All right, let's do this. Oh, yeah, Session 9. Mine was Session 9, so it's a slow-burn psychological horror film. It leads up to such a reveal that will knock your ass, like, right out of whatever chair you're sitting on. My God. So it's about a cleanup crew that goes to an abandoned asylum to work, where they find recordings labeled with sessions, like sessions not 1, 2, 3, leading up to the infamous Session 9. And with that, the mystery starts to reveal itself. Once they find those tapes, you start going down this rabbit hole of, like, who was actually at this asylum. And also, it's like an in-depth look into the characters that are behind the cleaning crew and everything. And they're not... Yeah, I just gotta leave it at that. I don't want to reveal too much. But it's definitely quite the film. Yeah, it's stuck with me since I seen it. I need to watch it again because it's just so good. Like, I watched the trailer, I'm just like, damn. Like, there's so much I want to remember again.
I'm glad to hear it's good because I remember when that came out, I just didn't get around it. But I remember that name and the concept. So I'm like, oh, good. Now I want to go back and watch it.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those that like kind of flies under everyone's radar. Yeah.
Well, it was that era where genre films were suddenly getting kind of lo-fi. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember this is all like... Blair Witch came out in 99.
Right.
And then there was not even found footage movies, but there was this sort of group of movies right after. Like, I remember Primer was sort of in that five-year block where all of a sudden people were making more lower production value and higher concept genre movies. Mm-hmm. And Session 9 I always sort of put into that grouping because mm-hmm. I know they did not have a lot of, like, you know.
No, yeah, the budget was not.
And around that time, Cube was made too.
Oh,
and
I've seen that too. One.
And like when Cube came out, they were like, they filmed everything in one room. And you're like, cool, is the movie good? And yes. But Session 9 is a great flick.
Oh, I
like
Cube 2.
So Hypercube.
Oh, that's what it's called? I was like, it's not called. Yeah.
But. Cube 2 is Hypercube. Cube 3 is Origins?
Is that a third one? I didn't know there was a third one.
There you go. Snap. You just did. Oh my God. You became that guy.
It's Cube Cubed.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, boy.
No, that's the reboot.
All right, then. What you got, Ollie?
Well, speaking of like kind of like this found footage, kind of like revitalizing the genre, I have The Bay, which is a film that's kind of like under the radar. Like, a lot of people... Have you seen The Bay?
It's what I was just like, saying about Mike Nichols directing a werewolf movie. That's Barry Levinson directing a found footage mm-hmm. horror film.
Like,
the A-list guy.
It's so crazy because like this is... I feel like it's a good film, but it's like one that I forgot. Like, I literally forgot that this movie existed, but then like Cloverfield came out, and so I was kind of inspired to kind of like look at like... found footage kind of films that like I really liked, you know, growing up. And then like this was like 2012, so this was like 6 years ago. I can't do math. Almost six years ago. 6 years ago. But anyways, the synopsis reads: chaos breaks out in a small Maryland town after an ecological disaster occurs concerning contaminated water and parasites.
Is this a picture of like the X-ray skull
with the
like,
isopod?
Something in the
creepy little
throat?
Isopod.
Mm.
Yeah,
was that on Netflix? I think it's been on Netflix for a while now.
Has it been on Netflix?
I believe so. That's where I've seen that poster.
It's gotten passed around, I think, in the streaming services.
It's gotten its rounds in. Carrie?
No, just check it out. Like, I want to hear what you guys think.
Oh, yeah. I've been wanting
those little bugs,
those
little isobugs, that, like, isopod bugs that live in the sea. Those things are real. Like, yeah. I mean, maybe they don't turn you into, like, a psychological killer, but anyways.
Right around that time, there was the story of, like, somebody jumped in the water in a lake somewhere and then had a headache and then died.
Oof.
And they found out there was brain-eating algae that shot up her nose into her skull.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sorry, that's a real event. I'm sorry to be insensitive and bring it up like that, but it is.
It's real.
There's crazy.
Yeah.
There's weird stuff. Well, that was, I don't remember the details, but there was one where, like, a girl was in, like, some South American country and then had some, like, flesh-eating bacteria or something because she went in the water and... You're just like, what?
Yeah, what's that one show called? I know this is off topic. I'm sorry. There's a show that, like, basically diseases get inside your body and you just, like, die. And, like...
Oh, sweet!
I was like, oh,
I'll
sweet.
Add it to my watch called? List.
There's things that go up a guy's urethra from the river and, yeah. Okay.
Which, by the way, every year it's like, that's a myth. No, actually, no, that's real. Really? No, that's a myth. No, actually, that's real. Oh, it's like a catfish. It's a little catfish with spines. And it swims up your dick.
Oh my God.
It's a wonderful world.
So I'm never going to... Yeah. I'm never going to pee in a lake, and I'm never going to dive
into
a lake.
Well, that was what it was. They're like, don't... Yeah, anyway. So
don't pee in the lake.
Yeah. What I've been watching, not a movie, but a show. Have you guys been watching Dark on Netflix yet?
Not yet. I'm adding it to my list of things I need to watch.
I feel it's one of those, like, people have been talking about it a little bit, and some people have seen it, but then, like, I had one friend who she totally has watched it, like, oh my gosh, you have to watch it, and it's just, I hadn't gotten to it yet kind of
right,
a show.
Right, same.
It's a European show, I think.
It is German.
Yeah.
It's in German, and I don't know if it's the whole, it says series directed by Baron Bo Odar, and sorry if I pronounce that wrong.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm sorry.
I was trying to think of the best way to explain it, because I was about to talk about something on one of the other shows. I'm like, nope, don't want to give anything away. But this is a nice brief one. A family saga with a supernatural twist set in a German town where the disappearance of two young children exposes the relationships among some of the families. It's really cool. Very quickly it gets into that this show is multi-generational, and I won't tell you how they do that. But yeah, there's
time jumps.
Not exactly. And some people are like, oh, it's like darker Stranger Things. And I'm like, no, because this isn't like supernatural. Oh, here's an example. So this is a character that at one point you see him as a little child on the far right, and then the one age in the middle, and then another age. Okay, so some characters, you get that, and then the show, as it progresses, does this great thing by, like, episode three, maybe two, but three, they'll do a split screen of the two characters at two different points in time, and you get to see, like, them as a child and an adult. Oh, it's so good, because then who they've chosen as the actors for them is great. All the acting is so phenomenal of, you know, I'm not super familiar with German films, so I'm like, I don't know these people, but all of them are very compelling. Ooh. So there's this weird cave in the middle of the woods by a nuclear power plant in a small town.
Yeah.
And some weird stuff happens. And I super recommend it. It's really, it is, just like the title says, dark. it's one that was like, no, there's some dark stuff. Like, there's a suicide early on. It involves children being kidnapped, which I'm on episode, like, 7 and 8. Oh, I think I just watched 7. Still don't know why exactly. So it's really cool. It always keeps you guessing. Like, you don't feel like, I don't know what's going on. Just each layer upon mystery keeps going, and just how all the people are connected. Though it did take me a while to figure out everyone's names. Because you're like, wait, which one is this person? Like, you could remember, like, okay, that's that person's wife. That's that person's kid. And then, like, you'll go a couple episodes in and you're like, wait, they're brother and sister? So that's kind of funny of it. But it's a really good show. I highly recommend it. Nice, dark, and creepy. And, yeah, I don't know. Like, there's more that I'm like, I don't know yet. So I want to see where it goes.
Right, the mystery hooks you in.
Yeah,
right?
You're just like, I need to know more about it.
I believe it did get renewed for a second season as well.
Oh, nice, yeah.
So there's that. Right on. Do you have anything you would like to recommend?
Any random film that people might not know about that you like?
Oh, it doesn't have to be new?
Yeah, anything.
Yeah, it's anything.
Oh, shoot, I don't know. They put out a really good Blu-ray of Silver Bullet recently.
Silver Bullet.
You should see that. That's like my fourth favorite werewolf movie.
Okay.
I don't know.
Hey, that's good.
It's actually a great disc, and they interviewed Everett McGill and a bunch of people who haven't really talked about the movie before.
Nice.
And yeah. And Gary Busey's in it. Come on. What more do you want?
The Bullet.
Yeah, Corey Haim, Gary Busey, and Anna Green Gables. Megan Follows.
Nice.
Yeah. That's a great flick, actually. Let's watch that. the werewolf looks like a big teddy bear, but beyond that, it's I love that flick, because Stephen King, of course, is, everybody's talking about Stephen King again. And I mean, it's not that anybody ever stopped, but it was such a huge hit in a way that was unexpected, mm-hmm. in a way that was validating too. Mm-hmm. People really love these kinds of movies, and just because of the fact that, I mean, I think everybody who's interested in horror carries Stephen King with them. You know, he's one of the most recognizable voices in horror, and he's sort of like on the Mount Rushmore of horror now, I think, with, you know, Edgar Allan Poe and Lovecraft and, mm-hmm. you know, whoever else you want to throw up on there. And but it's that kind of thing where every so often there are these... There he is. He's winking at Corey Haim.
Oh, man.
It's actually... I mean, that's the thing. Gary Busey has been such a cartoon, you know, for so long. You forget that he's actually a phenomenal actor. And in that, he's the quintessential drunk uncle that you still want to hang out with. You're a kid and you don't know that that's wrong yet. You're just like, oh, Uncle Red's just a lot of fun. It's like, he's drunk and irresponsible. He's going to get you killed. No, he's fun. But so the perfect Gary Busey role. But it's, yeah, there you go. I just remember that, and my friends worked on that Blu-ray, it's, I know Heather Buckley worked on that Blu-ray, and it's just, it's really cool to see some of these movies that's not necessarily regarded as a classic. I've been watching it since I was a kid. And, oh, Terry O'Quinn's in that, too. It's a great cast. And it's one of those flicks where, when you get right down to it, like, there are only a handful of good werewolf movies, really. Because mm-hmm. I don't count Underworld and Twilight movies where you have, like, a colony of werewolves fighting a colony of vampires.
American Werewolf in London and, yep. like, The Howling.
Yep.
I can't think of it.
The Wolfman.
The Wolfman. Yeah. The classic Wolfman.
Yeah. Oliver Reed, Curse of the Werewolf, you know.
Oh, I haven't seen that one either.
That's the Hammer version of the Wolfman.
You said The Howling, right?
The Howling, yeah. And Ginger Snaps.
Yes.
Oh, I haven't seen it. She always mentions that one. Ginger Snaps are so fun. Yeah, I know. Yeah.
And actually, that one has 3, and they're all fun, too.
There you go. Yeah. Ginger Snaps back.
Wait,
yeah.
Was the Howl, was that the one on the train? Was that the, there's one?
The Howling's like the lady at the news station.
Mm-hmm.
There's a werewolf movie on a train?
Yeah, there's like.
Wolf's on a train.
Or you mean at the end? That's the American Werewolf in Paris.
No. It's, oh, God. It was going to actually be my, my crypt for the week, but
it's the werewolf train movie.
I know, right?
I know.
Can we see YouTube comments in real time or something?
But basically, the train.
What? No, I'm just kidding.
The train crashes or just stops in like the forest in the middle of nowhere, and then they get attacked by a werewolf.
Oh,
and so that sounds cool. I think it was called Howl. It might have been called Howl.
I don't remember that one.
Be like werewolf movie.
Dog the soldiers. Trains, Neil Marshall.
That was a really good werewolf movie that I saw recently. Mm. But yeah, it's funny that you bring that up. That werewolf. That's such an iconic horror.
Yeah, and yet an underserved subgenre.
You guys didn't like Teen Wolf? What the heck?
Oh, the show?
I never watched Teen Wolf. But
I watched the movie a bunch of times.
Oh,
yeah, okay.
Check that one out.
Cool.
Let me know what you think of that one.
Yeah.
Because I really like that. So.
And I also I prefer my effects to be practical. So
hell yeah.
Especially when it's a creature. You know, once again, Shape of Water, one of the most fantastic things about it is that it's a real organic creature.
Doug Jones.
Yeah, it's Doug Jones in a suit. I know they did some digital enhancing too, but not a lot.
Well, it's like Hellboy, and it's one of our episodes things.
That's right. Yeah.
The blending of having practical effects and what they can't do with digital effects on top. Because they're like, well, we didn't have the space to make the eyes blink, so then we did that digitally, but the eyes are really there.
Carrie worked with me behind the scenes on the show that I did for Nerdist, we did it for years, Blood and Guts, that then got renamed Bloodworks.
Right.
So Blood and Guts and Bloodworks, you can find most of the episodes on YouTube. And we went down to Spectral Motion, and we looked at the stuff they were talking about Abe Sapien. If they had made that an animatronic head for Abe Sapien, it would have been this big.
Mm-hmm.
So they made a very sleek mask that went over Doug Jones's face and then digitally did eye blinks and gill flutters and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And you watch the movie and you just think it's this amazing creature suit, basically. And then you buy the reality of it and you're in there for the whole movie. All of the effects guys we talked to, because this show, both Blood and Guts and Bloodworks, the essential idea is that at a time when practical effects artists were being marginalized by the film industry, they were all at the top of their game. Like, they've gotten to the point where you don't have to hide the seams when you're shooting. Like, this is photoreal stuff. They walk onto set. People in prosthetics walk onto set looking like what they are.
Mm-hmm.
And while these practical effects artists are doing this stuff, you know, doing this stuff with every technique at its most advanced level, because of the way productions go and because of the kinds of, you know, decisions that producers make and schedules and things like that, they were taking a back seat to, oh, just do it with post-production, just do it with visual effects, just do, you know, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
So we wanted to basically take our little DSLR cameras and walk into effect shops and show you, hey, look, we're not even lighting this, really. Look at what it looks like. And so Scott Ian from Anthrax was our host. And we went to Rick Baker's shop before Cinevation got downsized. We went there. We went to ADI. We went to K&B. We went to big shops and little shops, you know, and talked about that constantly, the relationship between practical effects, in-camera effects, and visual effects. So Carrie was on that show.
You can see me, actually.
So that's a great segue, actually.
Yeah, because the troll chomps on Scott's hand, and she's one of the people, along with me and most of the crew. We run around and try to pull Scott's hand out of the troll. Basically, it's a documentary show that every so often something happens, and you shouldn't be able to detect where the documentary ends and the part we planned begins.
Right.
But for example, Scott gets his fingers bitten off by the troll from Hans and Gretel Witch Hunter. So that looks like that's from Gabe Bartalis. That's from his shop. And that's for a movie I think he directed. But this is probably a sizzle reel or a promo.
Yeah, I was about to say, we have a clip to show pretty much. It was like before the show premiered. It was
this is the transition between Blood and Guts. Oh, look at that. The memories. Yes, that's Jerry Constein's shop. That's over at Larry Bones. That's Rob Hall and Almost Faint. Human. There you go. I turned into a fish man. Don't fuck with the fish man. That was ADI, the gorillas. Yes!
And he killed me.
We got Brad Dourif to record dialogue for our show.
Dang.
Welcome to my. That's Vincent Van Dyke's demon makeup he did on Scott, devil makeup. There's Dino, there's Kyoto's.
They're just things.
Dan Harmon,
yeah.
Because we talked about stop motion.
We'll be right back.
There's some more. I saw Phil Tippett in there. Yeah.
Oh my god.
All these guys.
So this now lives on Nerdist, I believe, right?
Yeah, Nerdist.com. I think you'll find every single episode on Nerdist.com and look for the Bloodworks show tab. And then also Blood and Guts is under that same thing. It started as Fangoria's Blood and Guts, and Fangoria presenting it, basically. And then it's just, you know, a licensing fee was going to Fangoria for every episode. And we were like, hey, we barely have enough money to produce the show as it is. So third season became Blood and Guts. And then Nerdist ceased to be a YouTube partner. And so they broke from the Nerdist channel. And I was like, well, you can do the show and call it Blood or call it Guts. But you can't call it Blood and Guts anymore. So it's like, all right, well, Blood Works. That's it. Stop digging. You struck oil.
That's amazing.
So, okay, the show's called Blood Works, which is a great title.
I was about to say, yeah, it works perfectly.
And also that idea of the blood at some point is not just the fake blood. It's the blood, sweat, and tears that these people put into this stuff. It's the sheer amount of care and skill and love that these guys who are so passionate about what they do. Joel Harlow, who did prosthetics work on Black Panther and Logan and a bunch of other stuff, he's doing the new Hellboy. He's doing it on David Harbour. And he did an episode where he turned Scott into this deep one, into this Lovecraft fish man.
Oh,
Scott called him the fish man. It's like, oh, you're a deep one. He's like, yeah, I'm the fish man. And we made t-shirts that said, don't fuck with the fish man it. Or Joel made t-shirt. Like, he loved it that much. Didn't make a dime on that. He just did it for the love of it.
Yeah.
And he gets these great, you know, he's got these big budgets from Disney and all that. Gets these big budgets from Disney, you know, and then comes and does this. That makeup.
And that was at Cinema Makeup School, too.
That's right. We did a live demonstration. He left the prosthetics naked so that he could paint them for the class and they could see the way you would do it. But you can see, like, you know, Scott has this sort of semi-iconic beard that comes out of the middle of his chin.
Right. And then we had to make stuff because he was going to eat it.
Because he was going to put the stuff in his mouth.
We had to make the guts to.
And then at the end of the day, we ran out of time and couldn't do it because we the fish guts. So, but so we just have him tear the head off a student instead. That show, it's so fantastic to, like, I was and am a low budget DIY filmmaker who would not be able to afford to hire Joel Harlow to work on one of my films. Maybe I could now, but only if Joel dropped his rate to nothing and really, really wanted to work on the project. But he is one of those guys who would say, I would be doing this whether I'm being paid or not. And then I'm a guy who's like, well, I would love to work with these levels of effects, but I could never afford somebody like you. Yet there I am directing a Chucky scene, you know? And we got Brad Dourif to record Scott Ian related lyrics. You know, he says, now I'm the man. And then at one point says, Scott, while you're here, can you listen to my demo? He does this stuff. I think about this. I directed Chucky.
That's awesome.
It was just for one scene. But, you know, where else would I get that opportunity? I was not at that point in my career. I'm still not. Where I could get the opportunity to make a Child's Play movie. And yet, I got to play with that. That was part of... That's on my reel.
I was going to say, we all got photos with Chucky,
We all got photos with Chucky. We had a big group of us all together. And Scott, his passion for it and his love for it is so authentic and unforced. And, like, the best thing is when we go into a place and he looks around and he's like, oh, look at this. Like, he gets so... He's such a just authentic. I used that word before, but he's just such a no bullshit kind of person. And
well, he's generally enthusiastic when he gets in there.
Generally enthusiastic, and just like, but it's never, there's never any artifice to it at mm-hmm. all. I think some people tend to play up something, you know, for one reason or another. Like, you have some people who are like, I'm a fan just like you. Scott doesn't ingratiate himself like that, but he, then you see it. You see, like, his love that he has for this stuff. It makes it so easy to have him be the host of the show because he genuinely loves it as much as anyone. And so he becomes the audience surrogate. You're not going to get Joel Harlow to put a do a Fishman makeup. You're not going to get Ron Trost, who's Brandon Trost's dad and one of the great physical effects artists, to do squibs on you. Mm-hmm. But Scott becomes the audience surrogate. Like, he does this and tells you what the experience is like. He tells you what it's like to get your face chopped off by Rob Hall with a combination of practical and digital effects. And, yeah, so there you go.
That's awesome. Yeah, I saw him get transformed also into, like, the White Walker.
Oh, or, yes.
Yeah, and also he was a zombie on the Walking Dead. Yeah.
That's the last two episodes we did of Bloodworks. We went to the set of Walking Dead. I think that's in season 5. I'm trying to remember. It's when they get to Alexandria and, you know, Grimes shaves his beard and everything. Mm-hmm. And so it's like that episode. He and Carl are hanging out behind some barn somewhere, and they have to fight off some walkers, and he, you know, turns to Carl and he says, get ready. And then this one walker, not even a walker, more of a liar.
Yeah, he comes out from under, like, some rubble.
All this, like, pile of garbage or something. That's Scott.
Yeah.
And we did that whole episode around him putting the makeup on, designing the makeup mm-hmm. here in California, and then they shipped it to Georgia. We went to Atlanta, and then we went to the set, which is actually a town, is Sonoy, Georgia. Mm-hmm. And we went there and watched Scott get turned into, like, basically the closest he'll get to being a zombie in a Romero film, mm-hmm. you know? Just like a childhood dream. Greg Nicotero even says in the episode, Scott's been dreaming about this since he first saw...
Since he was a kid.
Like he would have been seven years old or something.
And you can tell, too. You can see, like, his face is just livid. He's just glowing. Yeah. He's just so happy.
and the fact that Greg is his friend, too, and mm-hmm. he gets to... He even says that, too, I think, in the episode. Like, who'd have thought that playing guitar in a metal band was going to get me to this point in my life? Like, all these opportunities. The doors that it opened. Just him... There's a lesson there, too, because I think he's another guy who, whether he's being paid or not, he would be doing what he does professionally. Mm-hmm. And it's wonderful to see people like that in this business, and people get validated for the things that they are passionate about and that they, you know, that they would be doing for fun. It's just they made a career out of it. So
you hear that, everybody? Hear what Jack says? You got to follow your passion, and you'll see what doors are provided to
and
you.
Be real
and be real,
be the authentic,
more, you know, be authentic.
Well, and also don't do that because that's gonna help your career. Do it because you got to.
Yeah,
because this is the only thing that I'm really good at, and that's me being generous to myself. I am never happier than when I'm directing. Mm-hmm. And I'm in that position now where being able to be on a set and have the crew and work with people, like, that's the moment where I'm like, huh, I feel I don't want anything else right now. Right. I'm completely satisfied. I could use more water because I'm very dehydrated. I could use a PA to keep me from walking into walls because, like, I'm in the middle of explaining something.
All right.
So just
yeah, a quote comes to mind from a famous director. His name rhymes with Shermo. He said that...
Shermo Del Boro?
Yeah, there you go. He said, don't make the films you want to make. Make the films you need to make, mm-hmm. in a sense.
Yeah. And I get the impression that if Kronos hadn't been a crossover hit and if Guillermo was still in Mexico making movies, that he'd still be making movies, you know?
No doubt about it.
And I think that beyond the company that it puts you in, it's kind of like, I mean, we all grew up with these things. I think that there's a language that watching films teaches you.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of people, you know, they go to film school and they grow up in this business. There's literally nothing wrong with that. That's giving you the same education of what the language of film is, you know, what it means to tell a story through shots, through images, through sounds, all that kind of stuff. But there is something specific about when you are a fan first and when you're taken in by the magic of movies and your film education becomes, this is my escape and this is the thing that I choose to engage in as my entertainment, this is my dreams made into something tangible that mm-hmm. I can actually watch and share with other people. I think that leads a lot of people to not just make movies that are like the movies that you liked growing up, but to start to think about the movies you liked growing up and how to take a step further mm-hmm. and not just make derivative films, but also make movies that are using that language and film language, even genre film language, to say something about us and something about the human experience. You know, a horror movie can be deep. I'm pointing at Get Out. You know, a horror movie can teach you something about society and about the human experience that you didn't know going into it. Mm-hmm. You know, I think I'm pretty down, and then I see that movie, and in the first scene with the parents and the meeting, the boyfriend meeting the parents for the first time, I was like, why am I so uncomfortable? Like, of course you're uncomfortable later at the party.
Right. Oh,
and
my
you're,
God.
Like, all that stuff, you're just like, oh, I weep for my ethnicity and how lame they are. But in that first scene, I'm like, I don't understand why I'm so uncomfortable during this scene. And I had to ask a bunch of my friends and had to ask, like, my black friends, why was I so uncomfortable during that scene? And they're like, because they're just paying a little too close attention. They're just being a little too nice. Like, it's this whole thing. Jordan Peele, in his horror movie, taught me something that I didn't know before about real life mm-hmm. and gave me an experience subjectively. Like, I was living through this character's experience. That's still a fucking horror movie, you know? It's still a bloody action climax at the end.
Oh, yeah. then antlers.
Yeah.
Antler thrust.
It's, you know, nobody needs to defend Get Out at this point, but it's like, yeah.
Well, since you brought it up, real quick segue. So there was a little comment on the Jordan Peele was considering a sequel to Get Out. They kind of asked him if he would make a sequel to it because of how successful Get Out was. It'd be like, you know, why not? He was talking to THR and he commented on how he'd seriously consider making the sequel. He stated, "I will definitely seriously consider it. I love that universe, and I feel like there's more story to tell. I don't know what it is now, but there are some loose ends, and I figured, why not? Like, what I was thinking, I was like, you know how the parents and everything were set up? What if they're part of like some, maybe I wouldn't say like some sort of secret society, but what if there was like some sort of group that does that throughout not just like this community, but other communities in rural America in other states?
Well, that sure, go that was." About. Enough people at the
gathering thing. Where did they come from, right?
You know, and they're probably interconnected to the other groups that exist out there.
And maybe they can play into, like, their success. There's other African-American people in society that are successful who are actually under the skin are white, or, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's that aspect, too, of just, like, if this is a story about cultural appropriation, all that stuff was happening in, what, upstate New York or Connecticut mm-hmm. or something. It was that kind of area. What if you're an old white man in the body of a young, fit black man, and you're in the antebellum South, mm-hmm. you know, you're going to be treated differently.
Right.
It's funny because it's saying that they're coveting being this other person. And then it's like, well, but have you ever been black for a day out in the world?
That'd be interesting, too. What if, like, they snatch like just a random person and put them in this body? In this African American body, and they have him subjected to being in those areas, and it's like, no, I'm white. It's like, no, you're black. And then he's just suffering firsthand as a white person's mind in a black person's body, like what they actually go through, say, in those, like.
Do you still want to put your brain in young black people now?
Yeah. But yeah.
There you go. That's a free one for you, Jordan. You can put that line in the film.
I feel like the title for the sequel needs to be Get In instead of Get Out.
Yeah, that'd be hilarious.
Get Out Again.
Yeah, exactly. That'll get work. Out again. Or just get don't out go
get
in. Down.
Get out now.
Get out. Yeah. Get out.
Oh, that's a good one.
Get out now.
I love it too because, and nobody talks about this, but I'm sure somebody has. Like, I just haven't heard anybody talk about this. It's an Eddie Murphy stand-up routine. Like, mm-hmm. that's the the joke is, if there were black people in horror movies, there would be no movie. Could be like, oh, this is a nice house. Get out. Too bad we can't stay. And then that's, but that it's this classic Eddie Murphy stand-up routine that turns into best picture nominee.
Yeah.
How great is that?
Yeah, because his friend was always telling him, like, oh, they're taking bodies. Like, oh, they're telling him to sex slave. Like, kind of, like, he was always on the nose with it. And then, the friend's like, nah, that's not possible.
He was right.
And us as audience were like, nah, that's not possible. But maybe? Like,
you know? It's funny, too, because I think that movie is so well directed and so original. And it's, I have even told people, it's maybe the one movie that I'm almost sorry that it becomes a horror movie.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's, or it becomes more of a conventional horror movie, because it was so original and so audacious for so much of the runtime. I would have loved to have seen it not be an action climax and actually go into some other area that I that's me nitpicking. That's the height of nitpicking what is obviously an incredibly successful film. That's also uncommonly predicated on characters and performances, and there are entire scenes in there that wouldn't have worked if the actor hadn't, like that one close-up of that well, I can't remember her name, the actress, where she's the grandmother is inside the woman. You can see the two personalities basically fighting.
Oh yeah, when she's crying, she's like, that was creepy.
The sheer courage to say, I'm going to put a scene like that that's entirely predicated on this performance, and for it to be layered and for people to get it, like I'd compare that movie to like Blue Velvet or just something. It's such an extraordinary vision, I feel.
Mm-hmm.
And then it turns into this more conventional horror climax, which as a huge horror nerd, I should be, you know, I should think that's wonderful. I'm like, no, it's cool. You know, I don't know. I always put too much. I always want too much from these movies. I want them to reform my reality instead of just being movies.
Right.
So, and then sometimes there's nothing wrong with just being a movie.
Right on.
Blah blah blah. Oh
my god. Yeah.
What I think. Sorry.
Yeah, I was about to ask. Like, would you guys be down for another Get Out?
Why not?
Yeah, exactly right. Why not?
I'm down.
My
only nitpick is when you're saying original, and I'm like, Skeleton Key, anyone? It's the exact
is
same
that the Skeleton Key? Oh, I haven't seen that.
It just doesn't involve race the same way, which is a big difference. But the different people in different people's bodies, spoilers, if you haven't seen Skeleton Key, but it's been out a really long time. Hmm. But it's the same body. Did you see Skeleton?
I did not see Skeleton
Key. It's the exact same thing. It came out in the 90s, and it was, all right, it's been out for a while, long enough. But it's these people, it's, and that's how they've lived through time, is they have done body snatching.
Hmm. But was it nominated for Best Picture?
Probably not. That one went straight horror. Though.
I only watch horror movies that are nominated for Best Picture. I've seen two horror movies.
I was saying,
and race made a huge difference in making Get Out a different kind of movie. Oh, but that's my only like record scratch when people are like, so original. I'm like,
and he'll admit it. It's a classic. It's a Twilight Zone
premise. Yeah, no, and it's nothing wrong with Get Out or anything like that. It's just interesting when there are other ones that have a very similar concept that you're just like, that one too. I just don't want like other ones that have such a similarity to be ignored. And then you've seen Serpent and the Rainbow, right?
Oh yeah.
Okay, so yeah, Serpent and the Rainbow, and then Skeleton Key, and then okay, that's that progression.
Yeah, that's like that voodoo kind of like bodies. Like
it's more connected to that, but it has that same
sure.
Mm-hmm. Body snatching. Kate Hudson, or was that
exactly?
Or was that a remake of Skeleton Key?
No, Skeleton Key was the one. Yeah, that's the one. Kate Hudson.
So I mean, it had big actors in it at that time.
I don't think I've seen it.
It's also a good
movie though. It's different.
When I say an original vision, I'm also talking about his approach to the movie too.
Oh yeah, no, stylistically.
Yeah, his vision. It's clear that he established himself as someone whose perspective you could apply to. Just like when I was talking about Ryan Coogler before, or even Guillermo del Toro, like these guys who they're choosing to do something, and I say guys just because they're all guys. There's now this wonderful, all these female filmmakers who hopefully the doors are just going to burst wide open, but we got to keep watch and make sure that actually happens. There's that ability to then say, I am doing this kind of film. You're going to see this material through the lens of how I see these things. So I find just from the way he directed the movie, I'm like, well, now I'll watch anything that guy directs. I want to see what his take is on any number of story, basically.
Right on. So, yeah, we're coming down to it. We're going to have to wrap soon. I just wanted to give you just the stage, in a sense, to promote anything that you're working on, or just give out just general life advice, or just advice that you've learned in your past years in the industry.
You guys have caught me in such a strange transitional time because I have nothing to promote.
That's fine, yeah.
Just watch Quentin 58. That's my Jaws homage. Look that up. Watch Good Night, my fun size horror film that I made last year. If there's anything I've learned, it's that I have benefited from not trying to be someone else. I can only be myself,
right,
to a fault. And I think it's served me very well. And the people that I've seen who have been very, very successful have done the same thing. It just be true to your, it sounds hokey, but be true to yourself. And don't enter into this business trying to figure out how to mold yourself into something that they'll buy. Have the thing that you want to sell, and then see if they buy it. And if they don't, keep doing it.
You know? Someone will, yeah.
Taste change, you never know.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Bowie taught us.
That's great advice. My God. All right. Yeah, Carrie, you want to put yourself over?
Wait, are we giving our sign-offs?
Yeah, we
yes.
have to wrap up.
Hey, everybody, you can find me online at Carrie D. Lane. That's K-A-R-I-D-L-A-N-E. And stay tuned. I'll be hopefully having some anime news show news to announce. So follow me online. I'll post about it.
Yay. Hey, guys, I'm Oliver Jenin. Follow me on all social media platforms at Ollie Dreamer.
We're going to find you again, Jack?
That Jack Bennett. That's where you find me on Twitter. I'll be announcing all that stuff that I can't talk about now because of all those NDAs.
Right on. Sounds good. I'll definitely follow you and look forward to hearing from that.
Thanks.
We should all follow him. Be part of this at 600. 600 plus.
Yes.
Plus 3.
Yeah, man. Every.
Yeah, dude. We got you.
Follow me. Follow me out of the studio.
Uh oh.
Into one of those shops. I'm down.
Right on. Yeah.
Well, thank you for coming.
Yeah,
thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for letting me blab about my stupid opinions.
Oh, no. That's fine. That's
movies what and we opinions love. Are subjective.
Oh, listen to Damn Dirty Geeks. Listen to the podcast I'm on, Damn Dirty Geeks.
Damn Dirty Geeks.
Yeah, find us on iTunes and Stitcher and everything.
Where podcasts can be found and listened to.
Sweet.
All right, everybody. My name is Anthony Becerra. You can find me at Tony B Dead. TonyBed. D-E-D. What? Tony B Dead. Dead. Sorry about that. Also, we wanted to show you real quick at the Super Bowl, A Quiet Place TV spot dropped, as well as a trailer for this one film called Les Affamés, which translate from French to The Ravenous. Check that out. It's coming to Netflix. We'll cover that more next week. But we ran out of time. But that's okay, because there's a show next week. So, see you all then.
Woo!
Until next time, keep it bloody.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.